Blog Talk Radio.
Conviction to Zero Redemption by Stephen L. Bobo.
Stephen Bubble here, Bozilla, if you will. Once again, with Bozilla Talk Radio, and we're in the kelp once again with Jessica. Before I bring Jessica in, I want to say this real quick. I'm reading a book right now, and I thank everybody who is following what I do and what my organization does. It's called Black Students and School Failures, Policies, Practices, and Prescriptions by Jacqueline Jordan Irving. It's a book right now that should be on the list for any parent of minority, poor. And because I put poor in the minority section because we're not that 1%, as I always say, because you are the boss, as my girl Flava will say. But I need you guys to understand this, that it's a book that you need to read, especially with our kids going into the system right now and in this crazy way these schools are going to go. Jessica, if you're there, come on in. I'm also going to have Danielle come in 15 minutes, Mark, and Dan's going to speak up on some stuff because I'm not really feeling 100% today. But Jessica, go right ahead. Go on in. I'm ready for you. Let's go.
Hello, everybody, and great evening. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio with Mr. Stephen Bobo and Ms. Danielle Andrews. I'm so happy and glad to be here on this Wednesday with you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what you got to talk about? Let's go.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So I actually I wanted to touch a little bit out on the school to prison. But I was when I went on someone's group page, and I saw this video of a young African-American male getting pulled over by a police officer today. It really disturbed me that of how the officer was so just blatantly rude. Like, he was just like so, like, he was more than just authoritative. He was like that type of, do this right now, or I'm going to do this and this and this and this, like a parent would tell a child, like a child would ask, why do I have to do that? And the parent said, because I said so. That's basically how he was talking to this man. So when the man didn't do what he wanted him to do, the officer, really illegal for him to do. And I shared that video on my group page, Faith, because I wanted people in a couple other groups. I wanted people to see that this is how all police officers really treat our black and brown men. And I just feel like some voices need to be raised about that subject today.
Oh. That is something that we all speak on all the groups that are on Facebook right now. That's why the Black Lives Matters is out there. But you're right, it needs to be spoke on. But the situation is, here's what I'm going to say to that, and a lot of people are going to probably get mad at me when I say this, but my thing is this. As a minority male, last time I checked, I was black and black and Samoan. Last time I checked, I'm a male. Don't put yourself in that predicament. Don't put yourself in that predicament to have the police choose your punishment. Don't put yourself in that position. They have the police to choose your punishment. First of all, they're not going to choose it right. Most of them, some of them. I'm not going to say all police officers are bad because they're not. I know some police officers right now personally are friends of mine, and they're good people. You know, they don't like what's going on either. But here's the thing. But we do have them one police officers who are trying to become, as you want to say, part of the good old boy club. And they don't understand. They don't understand. They can't understand what goes on in the hood because they've never been in the hood. And I'm not saying that that's an excuse, because it's not an excuse. Because just because you're from the hood doesn't mean you need to act that way. As far as that's why we are in the pipeline, and that's why we do that, because these are individuals. Because there's a situation right now that we are investigating with the pipeline, and I feel kind of bad. I'm not going to say nothing else more about it, because it kind of put my organization on notice, because not everything is what you think it is. I'm not ready to blow it off the bop yet, but it's coming. But it really does make everybody who fought for this thing look completely bad. But it's a pipeline story also. Daniel could talk more about it, but I think Daniel's got some other things to say. I'm going to jump off here. Daniel's going to take over, and you guys can go ahead and walk the show, because I'm kind of tired today. I do apologize.
That's okay. Okay, can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. You know, I get what you were saying about, you know, this authoritarian type of way that people of color are approached how they're approached when dealing with the law enforcement. We're just going to say law enforcement. There's a large responsibility when you hear the term law enforcement. First word there is law. And so I believe that there's a certain amount of responsibility that comes with that. If you are enforcing the law, then you need to use discernment in what law is being broken, if at all. And what level of force do you need to use for that? At what point does deadly force need to be enforced on a traffic stop?
You know,
at what point is threat and intimidation needed to be for a traffic stop? You know, go ahead.
And that's how I'm going to tie all this in to the pipeline, because really it relates all together when you're thinking about the school. Now, on this particular clipping of this video that I've seen, the man had his hands up. He wasn't posing a threat. He wasn't reaching for anything out of his glove box or out of any pockets of his car. He wasn't cussing or yelling at the officer, not resisting authority in no type of way. Wasn't resisting anything that the officer was asking him to do, except that just, you know, he didn't want to get, you know, out of the car. He didn't feel like this officer had a right to make him step out of the car. And because he did not step out of the car, the officer felt like that he was going to force him out of the car by grabbing him and pulling him up out of the car. Now, the camera obviously drops on the ground, and you can still hear the man screaming out, "Please get off me. You're hurting me. You're hurting me. Get off me, please. You're on my back. I can't breathe. Get off me. You're hurting me." And the officer is whatever he's doing, you know, everything is on camera because the man is showing, if you don't do it, I'm going to make you do it whether you want to or not. It's the same thing in the classroom. When teachers see that a child is rebellious and don't want to listen to the authority, they seem to try to label that child as a behavioral disorder child. And at that point, kick them out of school, which really, is that the answer? Because you send them to the principal office, then you suspend them, then before you know it, they're getting expelled from school. You know what I'm saying? Because they behavioral rebellious towards the teacher who might have been telling them to do something that was unreasonable in the child's eyes. And then maybe the teacher didn't explain the reason why it was important for the child to do that. So the child doesn't do it. And so the teacher, whatever the supervisor, they get out of control with the child. You know what I'm saying? I even heard some teachers put their hands on children before. It's the same as that principle. The same thing that the law enforcement is doing to people, the schools is doing it to our kids.
Well, if you notice, a lot of times the schools look just like prisons. Is it operant conditioning? You know, I wonder if it's operant conditioning that the prisons, I mean, that the schools, especially high schools, newly built, look like prisons. They function like prisons. If you think it's that panoptic type architecture where everything can be seen from one point, just like, you know, prisons have been built. It's like I said, it's operant conditioning, especially in your inner city schools. I put a post up about the metal detectors and all of that. It's teaching our young men how to go through the system and teaching our girls how to visit them. And, you
wow,
know, part of
that's
the
deep.
Part, yeah, a part of the thing that, you know, we do is trying to keep them from having to go into the system in the first place. But when everything around them says that this is all they're going to end up doing, that this is what they're used to. This is the environment that they're used to. They're used to classrooms that look like cells and used to hallways that look like observatory decks and used to food
wow.
that has been processed within an inch of its life and used to,
ooh.
You know, used to metal detectors at every dance, game, entering school, exiting school, where, if you remember, we had two drills when we were growing up. You had a tornado drill, you had a fire drill. Now we got active shooter drills and lockdown drills. Wonder why our kids don't have much hope. We basically drilled it, tested it, and conditioned it clean out of our kids. Our kids don't have any hope. I noticed the difference between kindergarten and third grade. In kindergarten, oh, my gosh, they are so hyped to get off a bus, get out of mama's car or whatever they are. They're like, show me some crayons and let me loose. I'm ready to learn everything. By third grade, they've been, I never forget, one little boy, I said something about a 3-day weekend is what I said. It was a Friday. And I told him, I said, oh, I'm so glad. We made it. It's Friday. We get a 3-day weekend. Yes. And the little boy said to me, oh, yeah, it's just an extra day at home, and then we come back into this again. Third grade. Not even double digits yet. And his friend was like, yeah.
It's times that I remember we used to be so excited and ecstatic about having extra days off. Now, kids are not happy about having an extra day off because we don't know what their living condition is at home. They probably don't have food. We don't know.
Right. I have to key on that one.
You're right, because you think about it. You just said it, Jessica. A lot of these kids, you don't know what's going on in their household. And then you take away, matter of fact, think of this. This might be the only meal, two meals they might have, breakfast and lunch. We have no clue. I hate to talk about food, but let's think about that. This might be the only thing these kids know is going to be nutritious, even though most likely school food is not that good. But what is the best food that they got? Because mama can't cook because she's working two or three jobs. Big brother's watching the kids, so he's going to fix oodles and noodles, SpaghettiOs. That's what these kids are going to be eating. But yet you want to take lunch and stuff away from a kid. School's not coming around. And then you give them a card. Now, there are a lot of people getting cards from the cities for a food stamp for kids to get stuff. And then you try to go use it, and there's no money on it. All right, I'm done with that. Go. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're right, Bo. You're right. These kids, they were given cards because they needed to eat. So they were given, EBT cards? With like a $300 limit on it for the month, and then they only got 1 month out of it. My son gets free lunch. I'm a single mom, and my son's disabled, and so money don't go as far as it used to was. So he gets free lunch, and he's supposed to get this card, and he got that limit, and we're like, okay, that's a weight off of me right there, because then I can follow good things for him to eat, so he won't be eating a processed thing. And then when this month came, I went to check, and there was nothing. And our friend of Bo and myself, Miss Wilson, she was saying that her son didn't get his, and she lives in Alabama, so this is, I would assume, at least on the East Coast. So if school, for some kids, school is the best part of their day. School is the best part of their day. School is the time where they have resources. At least for 6 hours, they have resources. At least for 6 hours, somebody's listening. At least for 6 hours, somebody's looking out for them. That's the best part of their day. Somebody's not yelling at them. Somebody's not raising a hand to them for goofy stuff. And now we've taken this away. And so not only have we taken away their support system, now we're messing with their food, and we're going to expect them to learn in a remote atmosphere when they couldn't even survive in a remote atmosphere. Just saying.
And you know what? That's, oh my goodness, touched on so many golden points there, because it just breaks my heart, you know. And the mothers are doing all they can. They're doing the best they can, a lot of them. I can see that. But they have, they have only one income. And that one job might only be paying them minimum wage. So that's the reason why they have to go get a second and third job. You know what I'm saying? It's not because they want to be away from their kids. It's because they have to. Because the fathers are gone, absent most times. Not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's just not enough to make ends meet with just that one income. And they have a lot of them, multiple mouths to feed, three or four or more children. So just with all that, the kids are the one, in the end, the kids are the one that's suffering. The children are the one that learn virtually in an environment that's not a virtual friendly environment. You know? And so just with that being said, I just really feel like, you know, my thing I wanted to get on here and talk about, I know I'm shifting gears here, but it seems like this seems to be the heat of the conversation, is this topic right here, because I was going to get on here and talk about, you know, the police abusing their authority. I was going to get on here and talk about how teachers abuse their authority with the students.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the main important thing of this topic is about, what about our children?
Mm-hmm.
What about the well-being of our children? How do they feel?
Mm-hmm.
Have any of us ever looked at how they feel about
mm-hmm.
what they're going through? I don't know.
That's,
I don't know, and think that any, a lot of us
is
even asking the question how they feel.
That's my specialty, is working with children in art therapy, because a lot of times they can't put words to how they feel, especially kids with special needs, because they may not have the words. My son is nonverbal, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't have thoughts. A lot of people think that kids don't have stress. If you think about it, kids, you know, if you, first of all, things that don't faze us in our 30s, 40s, 50s, things that don't faze us anymore were the whole world to us when we were 7, 8, 9. I mean, because our experience was 7, 8, or 9 years. And
yeah.
So the stress mm-hmm. level for them is through the roof. They've got a test. They've got a test coming, and they don't quite get it, but the teacher is already stressed in, so she couldn't help them. So they know that they're going to fail this test, and then they know they're going to get in trouble at home because they failed this test. That's stress. Mommy's got a new boyfriend, and mommy's new boyfriend is not very nice. That's stress. This child doesn't understand that mommy's new boyfriend might work third shift and he's tired a lot, or he's got 3 kids of his own that he's trying to take care of and got baby mama drama or whatever. All this kid sees is, you know, Tyrone is not very nice. That's stress. They know mommy can't afford certain clothes that everybody else has, even though their clothes are clean and stuff. But everybody makes fun of their clothes because they're from the thrift store. That's stress. Now, for us as parents, we may not see that as stress, because our experiences are that, oh, I lived through that. Well, they're living through it. Ours is past tense. And if we look back to when we were kids, that was stressful to us. Now, I grew up in the 80s, and Jordache jeans and E-Spirits and Izod and all of that went to a private school. That was the thing. My mother was, again, a single mom working at the post office and trying to pay for private school. There, I wasn't wearing a Jordache, nothing. My mother made my clothes. And although now, I beg my mama to make me stuff now, but then you wanted the stuff that everybody else had. That was a high-stress thing for me. And kids have stress. It doesn't seem, and I think we need to honor that our kids suffer stress. They suffer stress, and nowadays these kids suffer stress that adults do. There's no food in the house. I've got to pick up a paper route or babysitting or something like that because mommy used the last $20 for gas in her car, and we got 1 package of ramen noodles and 3 kids in the house. That's, you know, that's big time stress. Some of these kids are suffering from stress now that adults can't handle. And the kids don't have the tools to deal with it because adult stresses don't belong on children's shoulders. You know, the burdens of adults don't belong on a child's shoulders.
It sure doesn't, because I remember when I was a child, my mom and dad were married, and my dad, he was pretty much the breadwinner up until his death back in 91 when he was murdered, and my mom became a single parent at that point. But most of my younger childhood, he was there. He was there. He provided. He was everything. He was the backbone of our household. That's the way it's supposed to be with men. But you don't have. But a lot of families don't have that. I say maybe 1% have both parents in the house that are together. But at the point after my dad died, my mom was forced to become a single parent. And for her, I can remember, you know, being that big girl, because I was the oldest out of four, having to take the responsibility because my mom had to pick up a full-time job. And she had to go, and she had to go to work, and she never had to work before that. But then she had to work, and I became like the little mom taking care of my younger two brothers and my sister while my mom was at work in the late evening. You know what I'm saying? So it was like she was a custodian. She worked at a post office as well, cleaning up the post offices at night. And that was her. That was what she did. And she had a couple hotel jobs as a housekeeper and laundry person throughout the years too. But that was what she did, mostly custodial or housekeeping work. You know, those jobs don't pay a lot, minimum wage. But I just remember, you know, every day, you know, I had to. She would tell me what she wanted me to cook. She'd call the house, check on us, and I would make the meal, the dinner, for my siblings, younger siblings. And that was how it was. And so, like, that's how it is a lot of children now. You know, the oldest one or two children taking care of the younger one while the mom is doing whatever she needs to do to keep food on the table and stay afloat. And that's, you know, and it's sad, but the stresses of the world should never be on our children's shoulders. Never. But it is. And the stresses of adulthood should never be on our children's shoulders. And that is. And that is where more of us have to step up and, you know, provide more assistance and help to the families that's really in need like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it teaches kids responsibility and everything, but sometimes the stress is a lot. The stress is a lot sometimes, especially when they want to, like, you would want to go out and play or just have some time to yourself and play with your Barbies. You know, but instead you had to be mommy. And I think sometimes, you know, there's responsibility and then there's, you know, there's, and, you know, we all have to pull together as a family to get things done. But you just have to understand.
We've got a minute left, ladies. A minute left.
Yeah, these children. Yeah, they forced to become adults before their time. This was awesome talk today.
Okay.
Well, thank you too for having me on tonight.
Well,
I enjoyed it.
You're welcome.
We
always enjoy it when you come talk with us.
You are so welcome, definitely. Anytime.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful day. And thank you, everybody, for joining Bozilla and Dollface and Ms. Jessica and tuning in. We love you all. We have another show coming up next Monday. We may have another one jumping in sometime this week. We never know. We'll keep you posted. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day. Peace out.